Today on The Political Theory of Everything, I will be giving you your daily dose of news for today's date, Friday, November 19th, which includes Army Secretary saying National Guard members who are not vaccinated will be flagged. CVS stores are shutting down across the country. Kamala Harris's communications director has resigned. The Build Back Better bill is being voted on, has been voted on, and will be voted on again by the Senate. Next up is DeSantis trolling Biden by signing bills against the vaccine mandate in Brandon, Florida. And then after that, we have the results from the Kyle Rittenhouse, which I'm sure you've seen all over social media. And then for our daily contradiction, we have the Democrats bashing Ron DeSantis, yet decide to not fund anyone to run against him. Let's get started. As I said, to start us off, we have an article about the Army Secretary, and this one is going to come from The Blaze, and the title of the article is, Army Secretary says National Guard members who reject COVID-19 vaccination will be flagged, not permitted to continued service. So the Army Secretary, Christine Wormuth, has issued a memo stating that the National Guard troops who fail to comply with mandatory COVID-19 vaccination may not get renewed in the Guard, according to the New York Times. Quote, I have determined that all soldiers who refuse a mandatory vaccination order will be flagged, end quote. As she wrote, according to the outlet, which reported such a move would block soldiers from securing promotions, awards, and bonuses. So, in the event that soldiers keep avoiding the shots, they will not be permitted to continued service, except if they obtain an approved vaccination exemption, according to the outlet. Public and private sector vaccine mandates have become topics of intense debate around the United States. U.S. service members face a COVID-19 vaccination mandate. Quote, mandatory vaccinations are familiar to all of our service members, and mission-critical inoculation is almost as old as the United States military itself. Our administration of safe, effective COVID-19 vaccines has produced admirable results to date, and I know the Department of Defense will come together to finish the job with urgency, professionalism, and compassion, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said in a memo earlier this year. So, here's a response from the military to soldiers denying getting vaccinated. And as of now, we see a lot of this in multiple states with either vaccine mandates like New York and California, where it's not that they're forcing the vaccine, but they are indirectly by saying, hi, you need a vaccine to come in our restaurant, or you need a vaccine to be able to eat in this area. And so now we see it in the Army from, I imagine, Biden's vaccine mandate, hear them enforcing it for the National Guard members and basically saying that if you don't get it, unless you have some special reason, you can't basically serve here. And so we see that for the National Guard, and we'll see what happens with the rest of the military with this. But we see throughout the country these force mandates and then these mandates in response to the retaliation against wanting to get the vaccine. And so I guess we'll see what happens with this, as this happened on November 18th that we've heard about it. And so we'll see how well this goes. We'll see if it is upheld. We'll see if any lawsuits come out of it. As of now, obviously, it's a bit early to tell. But we'll try to keep you updated on that. But until then, we move on to CNN and the story about CVS. So the title, CVS is closing 900 stores. So the article starts, CVS Health is closing 900 stores over the next 3 years, amounting to nearly 10% of its footprint in response to the changing of quote-unquote consumer buying patterns. The drugstore chain said Thursday that the closures will result in a retail presence that ensures it has the, quote, right kind of stores in the right locations for consumers and for the business, end quote. A list of locations shutting down, which will happen beginning next spring, was not immediately released. The closures are part of a broader realignment of its retail strategy of its roughly 10,000 locations. That includes remodeling some stores to include more health services, such as primary care and enhanced version of its health hub layout. The closures will cost the company about $1 billion in the fourth quarter of 2021. Affected employees will be offered jobs at nearby locations. Neil Saunders, retail industry analyst and managing director of Global Data, said in a note to investors that the closures are the result of CVS having, quote, too many overlapping locations, end quote, and the dilapidated state of its stores that has, quote, pushed some of them into the downward spiral of irrelevance, end quote. Basically, that's like the article. CVS shares jumped 1% early trading. The stock is up nearly 40% for this year. They're saying that the stores really weren't updated much, so people just wouldn't go with it. It had old lighting. It had old designs. They weren't modernized, which I will say a lot of CVSs around me have been updated. And they've redesigned the stores, new flooring, new lighting. They're much more modern. So CVS has been making that change to at least the stores near me. So we'll see where these stores specifically are being shut down. Like it said, we don't have the exact store names and store locations yet. But that's big for CVS, which is most likely, I imagine, the leading pharmacy. And I mean, even in their non-pharmacy side, they still lead like Walgreens and stuff. And so we'll see what happens with this and see if Walgreens and those end up having to follow a similar thing and who would even take their spots in those retail places. But moving on until we figure out some more of that, we have an article from Fox News. This one is titled, Kamala Harris's comms director resigns amid growing criticism of the vice president. The subtitle is, the resignation comes amid historically bad poll numbers for Harris. So, the article starts, Vice President Kamala Harris's communications director resigned on Thursday amid horrific poll numbers for Harris and growing criticism of the vice president. Ashley Atien resigned on Thursday. The resignation will take effect next month. Quote, Ashley is a valued member of the vice president's team who has worked tirelessly to advance the goals of this administration. She is leaving the office in December to pursue other opportunities, end quote. Atien, a longtime advisor to the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat from California, served as Pelosi's communications director twice, sandwiched in between time in the Obama White House. The White House has struggled in recent days in the wake of a recent scathing CNN report that outlined frustration and dysfunction in Harris's office. ABC News George Stephanopoulos asked the vice president if she feels, quote, misused or underused, end quote, by the Biden administration. She laughed in response, no, I don't, the vice president said. The CNN piece touched a nerve in the White House with Press Secretary Jen Psaki tweeting out a defense of the vice president that appeared to be in direct response to the article. Harris's approval rating was a dismal 28% in one recent survey, a historically bad number for a vice president. It doesn't say it in this article, but Joe Biden's approval rating is around 36%. Of course, all these polls are going to have different areas depending on who they poll. As left-leaning ones would try to bring the average higher, right-leaning ones would try to bring it lower. But it's around 36%. As hers is around 28%. Of course, it could be a bit higher, a bit lower. It's really hard to know, as you can't actually do a census. You can only do a rough poll, they basically, when she laughed at the question, they're like, wait, you always laugh at hard questions that you don't know how to answer. So are you basically admitting to it right now by laughing to the question that Lester Holt asked her? That Lester Holt asked her back when the border happened. So they're saying, okay, look where you are now, laughing again at this question that we brought up to you. So we see this argument between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden mentioned a few days ago on this podcast, and then Psaki comes out, everything's fine, everything's doing great, and then Vice President Kamala Harris's communications director resigns. So everything, you know, say that photo, everything's doing great, and in the background, everything's on fire. And that's basically what's happening right now with parts of the White House is, you know, oh no, it's doing great, everything's perfectly fine, and the communications director is now resigning after being a communications director for a very long time for multiple high-level officials. And so it really brings up this question of, what's really happening between the president and the vice president. And what's really happening on the inside where we can't see, are they actually having disputes and disagreements? We saw Joe Biden or President Biden the other a bit ago because of his colonoscopy, put her in for, for a short bit, she became president, or took over the role of it as he went through the colonoscopy procedures. And apparently the news came back. There's nothing wrong at all, no surprise. And so he's doing good in that sense of health. But she was president for a bit, so obviously, I don't know, maybe that was because he had to, or, he's trying to show, look, I do trust her. Look, she's important. Look, she's smart. I don't know. That could have been also both. Maybe he had to, and it was like, well, to kill two birds with one stone, one bird is, I have to do this, and two is, well, it makes us look better in our relationship. And so we see that between Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, and President Joe Biden, with their relationship, then the communications director, and then him with the colonoscopy. So a lot's been happening in the past few days with the White House. But once again, their approval ratings for her, 28%, and for him, around 36%. So we move on to CBS News. We have a title here, House Moves Closer to Final Vote on Build Back Better Bill. And then it updates. It's like one of those live update things, and it says the new title, House Passes Build Back Better Bill After Overnight Delay. So let's get into the article. The House passed the Build Back Better social spending plan Friday morning after the vote, which was supposed to take place Thursday night. This was delayed by House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's hours-long overnight floor speech. The bill passed 220 to 213 at 9:46 a.m. Friday, and afterwards, Democrats in the House could be heard chanting, quote, Nancy, 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 end quote. Weird. The legislation still faces hurdles in the Senate, where it is unclear whether moderate Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema will agree to some of the provisions included by the House. In short, the debate over President Biden's signature plans to expand the social safety net isn't over yet. Quote, The Build Back Better Act is fiscally responsible. It reduces the deficit over the long term. It's fully paid for by making sure that the wealthiest Americans and the biggest corporations pay their fair share in federal taxes. It keeps my commitment that no one earning less than $400,000 a year will pay a penny more in federal taxes. Leading economists and independent experts on Wall Street have confirmed that it will not add to inflationary pressures. Instead, it will boost the capacity of our economy and reduce costs for millions of families, end quote. So that was from President Biden. However, in contradiction to his quote right there, in the White House has been saying that this won't cause any inflation or increase prices for goods, yet the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, says that it will. And so the Congressional Budget Office in 2010, then Vice President Joe Biden said that it was the gold standard. And now all of a sudden we're told we shouldn't listen to it because the CBO isn't that good, with that type of stuff. So instead we have to listen to previous CBO directors. I don't know the difference between that. I don't know how you can, like, all of a sudden you leave the CBO and you're an expert on it. I don't know. But obviously there's some disconnect between the Congressional Budget Office, like I said, CBO, and the White House, and what we're actually supposed to believe and what we're actually supposed to listen to. But Pelosi celebrated the bill's passage in the House, saying, "This bill is monumental, it is historic, it is transformative, it is bigger than anything we have ever done." That feels like that happens with every bill they pass that has a big dollar sign with it. And this one has a massive dollar sign with it, which I will get to in a bit. We move on. It's a very long one because the idea is that it updates you on everything. I guess we'll just skip to the next part. There's the big dollar sign with it. But the next part, obviously, to this whole process of passing the bill is going to the Senate, and that's where the real question comes in. And whether or not the Senate is actually going to pass it is very close. Like they said, Manchin, Sinema, but you also have some Republicans. What if some Republicans flipped like they did on another thing, on the another thing? Sorry, the $1.75 trillion one. Will they flip here? I doubt. But we saw it was very close in the House, and now it moves on to the Senate, and we'll see what happens there. I doubt it gets passed, honestly. But who knows? You know, they've been trying to pass this for a while now. I'd be shocked if it was passed, just because I don't see the moderates going for it. Just because, like, for Manchin to get reelected, he's gonna have to appease the right, because that's his only way of getting back into office. So we'll see what ends up happening with this bill. I wouldn't be shocked if it doesn't pass at all. And so it really does sit on the shoulders of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to decide the fate of this bill. I mean, yeah, some others could flip, but in reality, it's on them. And once again, they are both Democrats, but their constituents are more right-leaning, so they hold the power right now. Now on to Daily Wire. The title of this one: DeSantis trolls Biden by signing bills against vaccine mandates in Brandon, Florida. Subtitle, and it's a quote: Do we even have a constitution that constrains people like Biden, or is it just when he loses patience he can do whatever the hell he wants to do? End quote. So on Thursday, Florida GOP Governor Ron DeSantis trolled President Biden by signing bills against vaccine mandates at a site in Brandon, Florida. DeSantis stated, quote, "We're really excited to be here, especially because when I signed this legislation today, we hear so much about all these things, mandates, restrictions, tearing people down. Today we lift people up. We provide protections for people. No nurse, no firefighter, no police officer, no trucker, no anybody should lose their job because of these COVID jabs," end quote. One reporter asked, quote, "You believe these were bad for Floridians, but cities like Tampa and St. Pete have tried to, unintelligible, have tried to, I'm guessing, create policies you've made they think are bad for them, or block, I guess. I don't know. Tried to block policies? I don't know. But it's unintelligible, apparently. Why is it okay for you to violate the conservative tenet of home rule, but it's bad when the Biden administration..." And then that's when DeSantis responds and goes, "Well, first of all, this idea that somehow conservatism is about local school boards, it's the United States of America, not the United School Boards of County Commissions of America. So the states are the primary vehicles to protect people's freedoms, their health, their safety, their welfare, and our constitutional system. What Biden is doing is not constitutional. There's never been a federal vaccine mandate imposed on the general public." So we see this back and forth also between DeSantis and or Governor DeSantis and President Biden, where you see his vaccine mandate, and then boom, you see Governor DeSantis and Governor Abbott. But Governor DeSantis really just come out and rail against this thing, the vaccine mandate, mask mandates, and all that with the schools. No vaccine mandates and mask mandates are allowed in schools and such. And we see that strong push against these vaccine mandates once again from higher ups, not just, you know, weird Republicans hiding in a basement, but you also see it from these higher up, strong Republican governors or politicians, especially Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis here. But Brandon, obviously, that's referencing the Let's Go Brandon, which is a replacement for F Joe Biden. It's basically the clean version from a NASCAR race when one of the reporters said, "Oh, look, you can hear them saying, 'Let's go, Brandon,' when they were saying 'F Joe Biden.'" So there we see the irony, or the poke, you could say, the jab at President Biden by DeSantis by signing these in Brandon, Florida, which I guess is Ron DeSantis's governor, Ron DeSantis's way of saying 'F you, Biden,' by signing these in Brandon, Florida. But we move on to the last topic before our daily contradiction. And this one I'm sure you have seen all over your social media accounts as people post on their story, both pro and against, but the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. So I doubt I even have to say it, but Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty, and this verdict marks the end of a contentious trial. So that actually is also the title of an article from the Daily Wire, but it's Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty. So this trial, for the basis of it, Kyle Rittenhouse was in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He crossed state lines with an AR-15, which is a semi-automatic gun, which means it does not have full auto capacities, which means you have to repeatedly pull the trigger over and over again. And he goes to Kenosha with the idea of I'm going to help defend some businesses that are getting burned or whatever by these riots. It's not to say that everything's a riot, but it's just there were riots. Things did burn. You can look at photos. And so he goes to Kenosha basically to say, I'm going to help defend such and blah, blah, blah. And at some point in the night, he basically is walking down the street or something like that, and then he gets threatened. But basically, he was surrounded and felt threatened by this group. Someone held a gun to his head, or not to his head, but pointed a gun at him, I should say. That's my bad. Someone pointed a gun at him, and that's when he started firing. He ends up killing two and injuring one. So that is where we are now in the trial. They had their trials. The prosecution did not do so hot. You can watch the clips of that. They couldn't land really any hits. It was a difficult case for them. Because there were videos where you could see the guy pointing the gun at Kyle before Kyle shoots, them trying to grab the gun out of Kyle's hand, stuff like that, them yelling, you know, shoot me, kill me, whatever, earlier in the day or the night. And so the prosecution already had it out, very difficult for them. And then there was the verdict, which came out today, and that is Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty, which is where we now are in life. So, a jury found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty of murder Friday afternoon for fatally shooting two men and injuring a third last year during riots in Kenosha, Wisconsin, marking the end of a contentious trial that pitted the prosecution against the judge. Rittenhouse, who is now 18, lives in Antioch, a northern suburb of Chicago, about 15 miles away from Kenosha. On August 25th of last year, when he was 17, Rittenhouse decided to patrol the downtown of Kenosha, the downtown Kenosha area, alongside other armed men in order to protect a used car dealership from looting and vandalism. The city had devolved into rioting over the police shooting of Jacob Blake, a black man, by a white Kenosha police officer. Rittenhouse took a medical kit and armed himself with a Smith & Wesson M&P-15, which is an AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle that police say his friend illegally bought for him. Interesting. While guarding the used car dealership, he was chased by protesters and ended up fatally shooting two people, Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber, and injuring a third, Gage Grosskreutz. I don't know if I'm saying that right. The defendant and the three men he shot were all white. He was arrested and charged with five felony charges and one misdemeanor charge. The most serious charge was intentional homicide, Wisconsin's top murder charge, which carries a mandatory sentence of life in prison. The others were reckless homicide, attempted homicide, two accounts of reckless endangerment, and being a minor illegally in possession of a firearm. On Monday, the judge dismissed the misdemeanor charge. A misdemeanor firearm charge, which was considered the easiest charge for the state to prove. Previously, Rittenhouse was also charged with violating curfew, but that charge was dismissed last week by the judge as well. Rittenhouse pled not guilty to all of the charges. His attorneys argued that he acted in self-defense, which is why he ended up being not guilty. So, the main part with this is the social media response. And so, immediately after the verdict, boom, trending on Twitter and all that. And that's where you can see tweets like this one from Frederick Joseph that says, there are black and brown folks in prison for most of their lives over weed, but a white person can just cross state lines with an automatic weapon and murder people with no repercussions. So the main point of that is just how social media is twisting this story. And that's where you see, like I said, Frederick Joseph says, an automatic weapon. He's saying that this is a fully automatic. Kyle Rittenhouse can hold down the trigger and it releases all the bullets. That's what an automatic weapon means. No, this is a semi-automatic weapon. No matter what you look that up on CNN, any of those will all say it's a semi-automatic weapon. An automatic weapon is illegal, period, in the United States. It's not allowed outside of the military. And so we see this here. Once again, it's a semi-automatic, which means you have to pull the trigger and over again. But you see these lies from social media icons, these higher-ups from the left who were anti-Kyle Rittenhouse, trying to push this narrative that he is a white supremacist and shot up innocent protesters who weren't doing anything. When one of the protesters, he himself, inside of the case, you can look it up, he himself said he pointed at the gun before Kyle Rittenhouse. He pointed a gun at Kyle Rittenhouse before Kyle Rittenhouse shot him. He threatened first. He pointed a gun in Kyle Rittenhouse's direction at Kyle Rittenhouse, and that's when Kyle Rittenhouse shot him. And he said that. And so that's when the prosecution really lost. But you see this twist. It's like, oh, these random protesters, he shot these random protesters. When in actuality, all three of them were on him, one of them pointing a gun at him. So watch what you see on the social media. You know, read that. You take it in, sure, but then do your own research. There's videos of this out there that you can watch. And you can go watch the trial, and you can hear it yourself. It's not like this is tucked away secrets that we can never, ever hear, but this is out there on the internet for you to research. And you can very obviously see, once again, Kyle Rittenhouse was threatened before he went to shoot. And I believe he got hit by skateboards by one of them. So it's not like this was him just randomly targeting them. Also, they were all white, so I don't know how that's a white supremacist thing to do. But apparently it's a white supremacist thing to do as a white person is to kill white people. And so I don't know how that works out. But there's that. And you can see other things from the media comparing one this trial to another trial with an African American in it. And it's just like they pick and choose this. I've seen two different trials that they've used. So out of the hundreds of thousands of trials that have happened in America, they were able to choose two that happened to push their narrative and the idea that they want to show that this the justice system upholds white supremacy and wants to tear apart and destroy African-American lives. When you can see today, there is a man, an African-American man, taken off of death row today. When he was on death row, and then today, or... recently, yes, I found it. His name is Julius Jones. He was removed by the Oklahoma governor. Jones has long maintained his innocence in the 1999 shooting of businessman Paul Howell and even had alibis for the night of the killing. So he got his execution was stopped. And so now he has, it's now instead, from a death sentence to life in prison, which is where you see it. It's like, oh, the justice system is all about tearing down black people and all these other things. But then you see this literally at the same time. This article was posted November 18th, 2021 at 2:20 p.m. Like, you can see it very obviously that today's justice system doesn't just sit and revolve around tearing down African Americans, because right here in a red state, Oklahoma governor stops Julius Jones's execution. This isn't the justice system has become so politicized, even though in itself it's not, but the outside world politicizes it. And so we see this push that the justice system is racist, it is this and that, when in actuality you see cases like this. And if they're allowed to pull out one, you know, here's one for myself, I'm sure I could find a bunch more if I just looked. Yeah, here he goes, another one. Purvis Payne, death penalty reduced to 2 life sentences. So boom, I found you too. But all you have to do is put research. All you have to do is put time into this to realize that the media is trying to push, media, social media, mainstream media, any medias, are trying to push a certain idea onto you. They're trying to make you agree with their opinion without allowing you to do any research, because they say, oh, well, we are in a way your research, so we're just going to tell you what we want to tell you, because we know that you're not going to do any more outside of it, which is why on the show I try to have so many different sources, because that's the importance of it. It shows that right there, it shows just between CNN and Kyle Rittenhouse, you can see the wording between the two websites and what they think. Or same for New York Times, Washington Post. They will word it in a way that makes Kyle Rittenhouse still sound guilty, even though he was found not guilty. While Daily Wire and Fox News will say more things that'll push you towards automatically thinking he's innocent. And so you see this bias in the media that is so obvious that they're trying to push an idea onto you, which is like there, where he says automatic rifle when it's not. It's not even close. That's, I don't even know how you would do that. But... we move on from there to end with our daily contradiction. And so Democrats will say, you know, in Florida or around the country, you know, they were saying that everyone hates Ron DeSantis inside of Florida. You know, all the Floridians are dying. All these bad things are happening. Yet they aren't funding anyone to run against him. So this is recent news. The Democrats are basically not officially running in 2022. And so you can find that from Politico. You can find it on The Hill, like the websites, thehill.com. You can find it, I'm trying to see if you can find it on CNN as well, but you can find it on multiple websites. And yeah, you can find it on CNN too. So it's this, basically the Democrat Party in Florida came out and said that they're not going to fund anyone against the 2022 campaign against Governor Ron DeSantis, which is quite ironic. You would think that they would fund someone if it's so easy to beat him because everyone hates him, right? So that's where the Daily Contradiction comes in. Everyone hates him so much that they're not going to bother running against him, or like officially running against him. So I've never seen that before. You're told someone's so easy to beat, and that's why nobody's going to run against him, or officially. Obviously, there's still people running against him, but you know. No funded Democrat running against him. And that, I think, is quite the contradiction. He's hated so much, we're not going to bother running against him. Because it shows that they don't want to waste their money against him. They don't think they have any chance of winning whatsoever. And so we'll actually see what ends up happening with that as we get near to the 2022. But obviously, by now, you would have started funding someone to run against them. I mean, 2022 is right around the door. Think about what was happening this time of year with the Virginia governor's race. And so we'll see what happens there. We'll see if it ends up staying that way, or if this is just them stalling until they can find someone who has even the slimmest chance against Governor Ron DeSantis. But until we figure that out, I hope you have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for listening.